Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, well, I can't even begin to tell you. I'm very thrilled. I'm in New York City. With me are members of the Ulipo, a writing school, a school of writing that stands in French for words that would mean workshop for potential literature. Say those words, ouvrage.
Ouvroir de littérature potentielle.
And that was Hervé Letellier. And he is one of the five Ulipiens who I have in my studio with me. With Hervé is the newest member of the Ulipo,
Daniel Levenbecker.
He has just been inducted into the Ulipo in the last several months. He is the second American to have ever been inducted into Ulipo. Next to him is
Ian Monk,
who is British, yes?
Yes.
And is the only British member of the Ulipo?
The only active British member of the Ulipo, but the second British member.
Yes. And next to Ian is
Anyaita.
And where are you from?
I'm French. I'm from Paris, but I spent half of the year in the United States, generally.
Ah, okay. And finally,
Marcel Benabou.
And along with a program that you probably will have heard already with Jacques Roubaud, these were the members of the Ulipo who came to New York for a conference. Now, let me say that for those who have not heard me before on the subject of Ulipo, it is one of the most thrilling things I've encountered. Listeners who become fascinated can find the Ulipo Compendium, which has been published by Make Now Books in collaboration with Atlas Books. There are many Ulipo works in translation. For me, I began first with Raymond Queneau, with a novel that is now translated as Witchgrass. Then I found Italo Calvino, my favorite, If on a Winter's Night, a Traveler, but Invisible Cities and Cosmic Comics. Then I found Georges Perec, Life, a User's Manual. And then finally, I encountered Jacques Roubaud, and then these others. I mean, magnificent makers of works, and I thought it would be interesting to let them give some words and phrases that would describe the Ulipo. Would you like to begin, Ian?
Yeah, I think I would say that I could translate ouvroir as a sewing circle. And what we do is, like 19th century American women, we get together every month and we exchange sewing patterns.
Anne?
I'd say utopia. Ulipo is a utopian experiment.
Absolutely. Marcel?
For me, Ulipo is exploration.
Yes. Our youngest?
I would say it's part sewing circle, part supper club, and part secret society.
Yes. And Hervé?
Well, I just used the sentence used by Raymond Queneau. He said it was rats. Rats that build themselves the labyrinth they try to escape from.
Yes, yes, this is very famous. The rats who build themselves a labyrinth they try to escape from. Harry Matthews, the other American Ulipist who couldn't be here, told me that constraint is not a word used as much method or technique. But the writers in the Ulipo evolve special forms and, you know, one book was written without the letter E at all. But it was thought that a sonnet is a constrained form. Who can explain the three quatrains, the rhyme scheme, the couplet in an English sonnet? Irrational, and yet one of the world's most known forms. And they said, well, why not other forms? Why not the invention of other forms as well? Now, I thought that we would begin by reading a text by Harry Matthews, which will variously display different of these techniques, strategies, constraints, etc. It is called 35 Variations on a Theme from Shakespeare, and the source text is To Be or Not to Be, That is the Question. Who will begin?
Alphabetically, A, B, B, E, 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 H, H, I, I, N, N, O, 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 Q, R, S, S, T, 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 U.
Anagram. Note at his behest. Bet on tout or quit.
Lipogram in C, D, F, G, J, K, L, M, P, V, W, X, Y, Z. To be or not to be, that is the question.
Lipogram in A, to be or not to be, this is the question.
Lipogram in I, to be or not to be, that's the problem.
Lipogram in E, almost nothing or nothing, but which?
Transposition, W plus 7, to beckon or not to beckon, that is a Quincy.
Strict palindrome, no, it's you, ket, sit, ah, tape, button, rebot.
Missing letter, to be or not to be hat, is the question.
Two missing letters, to be or not to be, at is the question.
One letter added, to bed or not to be, that is the question.
Negation, to be or not to be, that is not the question.
Emphasis, to be, if you see what I mean, to be alive, exist, not just keep hanging around, or, and that means one or the other, no getting away from it, not to be. Not be alive, not exist, to, putting it bluntly, check out, cash in your chips, head west, that, do you read me? Not maybe this, or maybe something else, that is, really is, irrevocably is, the one, and only inescapable, overwhelming, and totally preoccupying ultimate question.
Curtailing, not to be, that is the question.
Curtailing, different. To be or not to be, that is.
Double curtailing, not to be, that is.
Triple contradiction. You call this life, and everything's happening all the time. Who's asking?
Another point of view. Hamlet, quit stalling.
Minimal variations. To see or not to see. To flee or not to flee, to pee or not to pee.
Antonymy, nothing and something. This was an answer.
Amplification. To live forever or never to have been born is a concern that has perplexed humanity for time immemorial and still does.
Reductive, one or the other, who knows?
Permutation, that is the question, to be or not to be.
Interference. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, that is the question. To be or not to be creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death.
Isomorphisms. Speaking while singing, this defines recitativo. Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers.
Synonymous. Choosing between life and death confuses me.
Subtle insight. Shakespeare knew the answer.
Another interference. Put out the light and then, That is the question.
Homoconsonantism. At a beer, a nutty boy too hates the queasy tone.
Homovocalism. Load of gold or affirms evening's crown.
Homophony. Two beer, naughty beat, shatters equation.
Snowball with an irregularity. I am all mute after seeing Hamlet's annoying emergency, yours truly, Shakespeare.
Heterosyntaxism. I ask myself, is it worth it or isn't it?
In another meter. So should I be or should I not? This question keeps me on the trot.
Interrogative mode. Do I really care whether I exist or not? We leave the reader saddled with this painful question.
For those who are eager to find this text, the Ulyapol Compendium is one source, but it was also published in a part of an issue of McSweeney's. It's one-third of issue 22, called The State of Constraint, New Work by Ulyapol. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with a group of five members of the Ulyapol, and we're providing a kind of mini-anthology of the work. What you just heard was Harry Matthews' 35 Variations on a Theme by Shakespeare. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with members of the Ulyapol about the Ulyapol, and here it is, we'll go. Now, one of the things that I truly love about this school of writing is that while very literary, it's very playful. And one of the things that us bookworms have in common is the question of how to store books. I myself have an entire separate apartment for the books that have become, oh, so many too many. And so I have an apartment for life and an apartment for the books. And Garetta has written a piece. It is a classic Ulyapol subject. Among the things that she suspects about books is that they are alien life forms come to suck up our space and our minds and our ability to do the laundry by appealing to us from under the laundry pile when we meant to do the cleaning we meant to do. These are all conditions that I live under. She has principles. And thus, these are principles for alternate arrangements of a library.
Principle number one. Any set of books can be partitioned according to the following Russellian principle. On the one hand, books in which one remembers having encountered at least once the word book. On the other, books that left no memory of having contained the word book. Principle number 8. Alternative partitioning principle. Homebound books, nomadic books. And among the latter, one may distinguish books bought on the other side of the Seine or the Thames, the Mississippi, the Tiber. Books that have crossed an ocean at least once. Books you missed cruelly one night at 3 a.m. because they had remained on the other side of the ocean. Books that show a proclivity to migrate under beds at the first opportunity. Books you took with you more than once to the countryside with no other consequence than affording them a breath of fresh air. Principle number 9. Books between whose pages one has tucked to let them dry, leaves, flowers, or grass picked on certain walks. Books containing at least one sentence you know by heart. Books that have left no memory. Books you remember reading lying down on a light-colored sofa in a room in some faraway city. Principle number 10. Books given to you by someone you love or have loved. Books you talked about with someone you loved. Books you wish you had talked about with someone you loved. Books you imagine someone you love or have loved could enjoy or could have enjoyed. Books you would never have read if someone you love or have loved had not aroused your desire for them. Books you wish or have wished to read in bed with someone you love or have loved without ever telling them so. Books holding no relation of any sort to the love of anyone. But who remembers those?
Anne Garreta reading, well, the principles for which an alternative library might be arranged. Now, I thought it would be very interesting to hear a text, hear the principle that organized it, and hear it again. And this is going to be performed by Daniel Levin Becker.
This first one is a text that I wrote to enter in a 160-word story contest that was sponsored by a bookstore in Oxford, Mississippi. And the constraint is simply a matter of word count. That summer, things stuck to him. He would arrive at the desk or window or bookshelf to find a small piece of paper clinging, as though brokenhearted, to one or the other of his bare feet. At first, they were only notes he had left himself. Investigate spider webs, or buy milk, or forget her. But by the end of June, his feet produced messages he did not recall, like, the lakefront smelled of quinoa today, or, you make a better door than a window. By Bastille Day, he no longer recognized the handwriting on the notes as his own. He began to save them in a coffee tin by his bedroom window, in case one day he happened to tread upon some indication of their provenance or purpose. But on the first dry day of autumn, he found them all gone, save one, on the back of a wilted receipt from a gas station in Oklahoma that said simply, socks.
Did you win?
I did.
Oh.
I thought it was a kind of symbolic affront to Faulkner.
We have, to our amazement, a text called How I Wrote Certain of My Books, which could drive a person crazy and has driven many French scholars crazy as they find these rules and hidden puns embedded. Marcel Benabou has written Why I Have Not Written Any of My Books and Dump This Book While You Still Can. There's a certain way in which literature is perceived as a threat.
Well, what I wanted to do is to give an answer to a challenge: how to write a book about not writing books. Write a book which is the self contradiction, which is always self-contradictory. And that was my first book, Why I Haven't Written Any of My Books. It was the answer to this paradox, the contradiction of writing on not writing. And my second book was Dump This Book Before It's Too Late. It was the contradictory contradiction. It was to write about the impossibility of reading. The story of Dump This Book About Before It's Too Late is that the reader starts reading a book, and the first page of this book is Dump This Book Before It's Too Late. So he has a struggle with this book all all along the book. So there is the book in the book and the book which is telling the story of the book into the book. So now, that's the kind of challenge I like.
Although Jacques Roubaud could not be here, he read a piece for us. This is Jacques Roubaud reading Correspondence.
Correspondence, Letter 1. I have just received your last letter and reply immediately. You have asked if I have received your last letter and if I intend to reply. Let me point out that you, having sent your last letter, makes the letter you previously sent no longer your last letter, and if I reply, as I am now doing, it is not in response to your second-to-last letter. I cannot, therefore, satisfy the requests you have made in your last letter. I would also observe, by the way, that your last letter does not respond, despite what you affirm, and I quote, I have just received your last letter and reply immediately, to the letter in which I query it, lest I am mistaken. But I am not mistaken, I have got copies. If you had received my last letter, and if you intend to reply, failing any clarification and response from you on these two points, to which I attach, for good reason, I think, particular importance, I shall, much to my regret, be obliged to interrupt our correspondence. Letter 2. I have yet to receive your next letter, but shall immediately reply. You ask if I have received your last letter and if I intend to reply. You might well wonder how, not yet having received your next letter, I can know what you ask me if I have received your last letter and if I intend to reply. The answer is simple. All of your letters, and this one would be your 317th. I have them all, as well as copies of all of mine, being thus. Have you received my last letter? If so, and I would be quite surprised if you had not yet, though should that be the case, do let me know. Do you intend to reply? That's how you began your very first letter to me. That's how you began your second letter, your third letter, and so on, until your last letter, the 316th. Reasoning by induction, I have deduced that your next letter will begin like the preceding ones. Consequently, I consider myself authorized to reply to it as if I had received it by now. And I reply with the following. I have just received your last letter and reply immediately. You ask if I have received your last letter and if I intend to reply. If I may, please let me point out that you, having sent your last letter, makes the letter you previously sent no longer the most recent. And if I reply, as I am now doing, it is not in response to your second-to-last letter. I cannot, therefore, satisfy the requests you have made in your last letter. I would also observe, by the way, that your last letter does not respond despite what you affirm. And I quote, I have received your last letter and reply immediately to the letter in which I queried, lest I am mistaken, but I am not mistaken, I have got copies. If you had received my last letter and if you intend to reply, failing any clarification and response from you on these two points, to which I attach, for good reason, I think, particular importance, I shall, much to my regret, be obliged to interrupt our correspondence. And so on.
That was Jacques Roubaud reading Correspondence. Now, Marcel Benabou is a professor of ancient history, and one of the things that is distinctive about the Oulipon is that many of its members have had alternative careers and areas of interest that were not primarily about writing, although many of them have come to generate texts. I thought I'd ask you what it is you also do, Hervé.
I work daily for a newspaper, which is Le Monde. And I write a very short text of 2 lines every day.
aphorisms or?
It's sort of aphorism about the news, what's happening in the world. And it's a sort of a wit thing.
And Daniel?
I write textbooks and I write about music for a couple of magazines.
I hear you're also a DJ, yes?
It's a bit of an overstatement. Jean-Jacques was basing that on my college radio show.
Ah.
But I theoretically have what it takes to be a DJ.
And when you were a DJ, you used certain constraints in the choice of music.
From time to time, yes.
You know, in Los Angeles, the first Ulipo show led to bands writing to me that they were constructing their lyrics in lipograms. I mean, it was really, it's kind of an inspiring thing. Ian?
I'm a translator.
Yes, and have done the new Impressions of Africa, a nearly impossible thing to do.
But I also translate marketing reports.
You have to start somewhere.
Yeah. Sure.
Anne?
I'm a professor. I'm a research professor at Duke University in the literature program. And I'm an associate professor in French literature at the University of Rennes in France. But I've also done other things with my life before. And at the same time, I also used to be a DJ in nightclubs. And I like doing woodworking a lot. Woodworking.
And other than Ulipo and ancient history, Marcel, is there more?
No. Ulipo and ancient history is all my life.
I've been speaking with the aforementioned from the Ulipo, and it's been a mini anthology. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to recording engineer Leszek Wojciech at the Carnegie Studios in New York City, and to the cultural services of the French Embassy for both bringing me and these writers to New York City. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Books, 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 books. Books can be funny too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.